I'm an addict named Mark. From relapse and recovery. The first thing to do is to stay clean. This makes all other stages of recovery possible. As long as we stay clean, no matter what, we have the greatest possible advantage over our disease. For this, we are grateful. The first thing to do is to stay clean. This makes all other stages of recovery possible. As long as we stay clean, no matter what, we have the greatest possible advantage over our disease, and for this, we are grateful.
That's right.
So I'm thinking of gratitude. And first, I want to thank my sponsor, Mike. I don't even know that I'd be here if it wasn't for Mike. And Mike always reminds me, in step one, it says a clean day is a successful day. And when I remember that a clean day is a successful day, I remember that I've got to have my priorities straight. Because when I have a day where it seems like something's more important than staying clean, I know I got my priorities twisted around. I'm grateful to be clean. It's been a successful day so far. God willing. I wanted to say thank you, express some gratitude to the Brana Planning Committee, George and the others. This is my fifth Brana in a row, all clean. It's great to be back. I want to thank you for helping me. Instead of trying to cite every single person up here who taught me the thing that they taught me or said the quote that I'm going to share, I'm just going to tell you that I didn't make any of this stuff up. I learned it from you. What I'm going to try to do is carry the message. Not make up the message, carry the message. I do want to talk for just a second about using, but that's about it. Just a second. Because I've got a feeling that if you've come any length to get here today to spend a weekend with us at an NA campout, you probably know a thing or two about getting high. I don't think I'm going to surprise you with anything up here. The two things I always say about my using days was that I used every day, multiple times a day for years, and I thought I couldn't stop. Every day, multiple times a day for years, and I thought I couldn't stop. And the other thing I always say is that I came here high. I happened to be using Suboxone when I came here high, and I needed your help to quit. And it's interesting when you think about our primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, and you think about how important the newcomer is, it's funny at times to look at the reaction we give people who come here exhibiting the most obvious symptom of our disease. Wouldn't it be strange going to a cardiologist's office to have the cardiologist say, "Come back when your cholesterol's lower." Right? Primary care physician says, "Sleep a couple of days and get that fever down, and then you can meet with me." Well, sometimes we come here high, and we need help. And if you find someone who's not willing to give you the help, you find somebody else, like Mike said, and they say, "Keep coming back." We've got a third tradition that says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. And when I got here, I was a little bit self-centered. Or maybe a better way to say it, more self-centered than I am now. Just to keep everything in perspective. I thought that tradition 3 was written for me. You see, they put that tradition in so that people who are still using can come here and get help. And that's the beautiful part of our steps and our traditions, is that they're relevant for lots of people, no matter where they're coming from and what positions they are in their life. So that now what I realize is that the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using, which means for me, I've got a responsibility to maintain that flame of desire. My job is to ensure I have a desire to stay clean, to retain my membership. And no one else can do that for me. Right? Because we know that some people get really good at getting years, and they forget how to get a day clean. So that's it on using. I want to talk about getting better now. And my hope is to kind of divide this into a couple of parts. One thing I always do, if I'm asked to share at a rehab, a hospital, a prison, I like to talk about the how of our program. H-O-W. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And our step working guide says that there are two other ones that you gotta have to stay clean. It's honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, acceptance, and humility. I'd like to talk about those five, just bread and butter basics. And then after that, I'd like to talk about steps. H is for honesty. I learned that I had to get honest about a lot of stuff. I'm a chemist. I'd like to think that I'm able, like a real one. Like, not like, never mind. I'd like to think that I can interpret data and make sound decisions based on the data that's coming in. But I gotta tell you, I was collecting data and I was looking at it upside down and sideways, backwards and cross-eyed. The data was in, my way wasn't working. And I didn't get it. And I had to get honest about the fact that my way doesn't work. Second, I had to get honest about using. And I never say using isn't an option for me, because of course, it's definitely an option. They're still getting high down the way. And I can still decide to get in the car and go down there and get high. And some of my friends have gotten in their cars and gone down to get high and never come back. Certain I could use, positive I could lose everything, and pretty sure that I could die. What I had to get honest about is that I can't use successfully. When I use, it doesn't turn out well. That's what I have to believe, to convince myself. It'll be no different this time. If I pick up, I had to get honest about the fact that my disease and using drugs aren't the same thing. I used to use drugs because of my disease. If I think that my disease of addiction and using drugs are the same thing, then when I quit using drugs for a couple of days in a row, I'm good to go. Not me. I got a disease, I'm just now learning about it. Part of the way I learn about it is working steps and listening to you. Part of the way I learn about it is going to meetings. I'm starting to see some common themes coming out of these meetings. I'm seeing obsession, compulsion. I'm seeing isolation, alone in a crowded room. I'm seeing people who backpedal away while they're talking to somebody, right? I'm not listening to you when you're talking. I'm backpedaling away. I got something else to do. You're coming down the hallway. I'm looking the other way so that I don't have to say hi. Or at least that's what my head tells me. I got to put in work to do something different. There's something about my disease that says I'm different. Even though you went through it, and it was worse than I had it, I still have this sense in my head when I'm in the grip that no one's ever experienced this before. Not this bad. There's nothing that anyone could tell me when I'm in disease thinking that's in any way relevant to my experience. That's a common theme. I hear people share this. I've got problems with the way I think. I'm a hypersensitive person. I have an issue with the way I process feelings. And until recently, I got a two-track mind for feelings. It's binary, zeros or ones. It's either good or bad. That's all I know. It's either I like this one or I don't like this one. I'm learning that there are different feelings than that, and that feelings aren't facts. Medical science tells me I've got a wiring issue in my brain. I've got a problem with my reward system. Things have been flipped around so that my head tells me if I don't get certain things when I want them, it's not going to be okay. And this isn't just like pretend. This is like when they hook you up to a really expensive machine and watch your brain. That's actually what happens. And turns out we've known about it for a while, right? We have it right in the front where it says we can't live and enjoy life like other people do. We had to have something different. And we thought we'd found it in drugs. I don't know that there's a better line in all of the literature to describe my disease than I had to have something different. A lot of times when I'm in the grip of my disease, I don't know what it is that I need. I feel like I'm crawling in my skin. I feel like I want to get up and run. I don't know where to. All I know for sure when I'm in disease thinking is what I got now isn't good enough. Once I get honest about the idea that my disease and using drugs aren't the same thing, then I need a new way. And our literature says when at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, right? It tells us the bitter ends or find a new way to live. That's the one, right? That's the one. It doesn't say bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or stop using. It says bitter ends or find a new way to live. To get a new way, I need an open mind. That's O, open-mindedness. Funny about open-minded Mark prior to coming to the program. I was the most open-minded guy in the world. Open-minded Mark, when he's trying to get high, drives to the first random corner, pulls up to the first random dude, rolls down the window and says, "Give me whatever you got. You could put dirt in a bag and give it to me." All of a sudden, you tell me it's good, I say, "Well, give me 10 of them," right? I come to NA, and all of a sudden, I want you to prove it. Prove it. Right? You mean you've been here for a while, clean, and you got this way that works, and every time I come back, you're still here? I don't know. Right? Where's the open-mindedness now? The nice part about this program is that it doesn't require that I understand it or like it. In fact, if the requirement was ever that I had to understand or like it first, I probably wouldn't have gotten anything done around here. Totally closed off. Willingness, W. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Willingness means I've got to do something different. I've got to take suggestions. They told me, get to a meeting. My sponsor says, plan your day around a meeting. They said, get a sponsor. Call them. They said, get a home group. Support the meeting. They said, get in service. They said work steps. I guess I'm a little bit embarrassed. When I got here, I didn't know what get in service meant. My only experience with service was community service. And so when I got here, what I thought you were doing was meeting in the center of town and, like, scraping graffiti off of, like, underpasses and stuff like that. And I didn't know what step work was either. And so I went on to NA.org, and they have a chat room on there. I've been there for a while, but it used to meet every night at 10 p.m. So I would private message people on the computer and ask them questions like, what does it mean to be in service? Or I would ask them, what does it mean to work steps? And the interesting part about that one is, it's actually kind of complicated. It wasn't even really a stupid question. Because you could ask 10 people what it means to work steps, and you might get 10 different answers. Acceptance. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are the how of our program. The flat book says, but you need acceptance and humility too. I don't find myself very often driving down the street asking, why do I have these blue eyes and this blonde hair? And the reason I don't think that or ask that is because I paid attention in science class. See that, a plug for science class there? And I don't ask the question because I know there's this strand of atoms in my body that's connected in a way that codes for this stuff. And I got some of it from my mom and some of it from my dad. Interestingly, sometimes I find myself driving down the street wondering, why is it that I'm an addict? And of course, the answer is because I've got this string of atoms in my body that's coded in a way to make me this. And if I need any evidence of that, all I have to do is look to my family. We had to have something different, and we thought we found it in blank. You fill in the blank. It doesn't really matter what your flavor is, but there's plenty of people in my family who got it. I'm grateful now for acceptance, particularly self-acceptance. I'm able today to be happy, not in spite of being an addict, but because I'm an addict. When I got here, I thought, party's over. I thought, there's a ceiling for you now, Mark, and you'll never get above that ceiling when it comes to enjoying life, to having fun, to having friends. I mean, talk about insane. Now, I have wonderful friends that I'm closer to than anyone I've been in the past. Not in spite of being an addict, but because I'm an addict. I get to go on wonderful trips, not in spite of my addiction, but because I'm able to accept who I am. One time my dad told me this story, and my dad's just a regular old, normal, wonderful person, who I think at times is probably confused when I tell him I've been clean for a few years in a row, because he's probably thinking, well, I've been clean for 66 years in a row. But anyway, so every now and then he tells me good advice and I listen, right? And he told me once that he went to a Led Zeppelin concert when he was younger, and he watched them and he remembered thinking, boy, it doesn't get any better than this. And he thought, in fact, if this isn't good enough, then I've got a problem. And I was thinking last night, I think for the last 5 years, at about this time, I found myself looking above the shelter, into the trees back here. There's something about this lighting. Breathing in the fresh air, which, believe it or not, isn't like this in Philadelphia. We just left a ground level ozone warning. Like, I'd be better off staying inside, sitting on the couch, than riding my bike outside. That's how bad it is in Philadelphia. I found myself last night, just like the past 5 years, looking behind this shelter up into the trees and thinking, if this isn't good enough, then I've got a problem. The conditions for happiness are already here. If I'm looking for something else, then I've got bigger fish to fry. In fact, that's my problem. Humility. It says in our literature that humility is as important for recovery as food and drink are for sustaining life. I think I used to read humility and have no idea what it meant. I think I used to see references to humility or references to being a human being or part of the human race. I think in Living the Program, it says something like, did I allow myself to be part of the human race or a human being today? And I had no idea what that meant. I was also a person who heard people say in the rooms, boy, when I got here, I thought I was a real piece of crap. And I used to think, wow, that's a shame. I've never thought that I was a piece of crap. But what I've learned here is that there is what I say, what I think, and what I do. And I might say I'm not a piece of crap. I might think I'm not a piece of crap. If I'm treating myself like a piece of crap, then I believe I'm a piece of crap. And that's what I was doing. So when I read something in Living the Program, the pamphlet, like, did I allow myself to be a human being today? Instead of that immediate reaction of, what's this even mean? Today, I think, am I saying it? Am I thinking it? Or am I doing it? Human beings make mistakes. Am I allowed to make mistakes? Human beings have feelings, and sometimes they're not ones or zeros. Sometimes they're not good or bad. Sometimes they're complex. Sometimes they're like misfires in my brain that don't mean anything. I don't have to take every feeling I have for a ride. I don't have to be robotic, expressing no feelings whatsoever. I don't have to have unreasonably high expectations. In shifting to talking about steps, I was just thinking the other day in my home group, which is Recovery in Progress, Wednesday night in Souderton, Pennsylvania, at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central. I've got this friend who calls me up, who I recently divulged to that I'm in recovery. And I don't share that openly because I'm not sure who it helps or if it helps anyone. And my sponsor tells me, if you're not sure what to do, then don't do anything. Sometimes I'm not sure whether I'm want to tell people that I'm in recovery to help, or if I want, like, I heard a guy share one time, we're the only people who want to get a prize for running out of a burning building. Right? I finally quit putting poison in my body every day, multiple times a day for years, and now I want a cookie because of it. Right? This should be, like, natural, this response. I'm thinking of this guy who calls me up and says, boy, I'm having trouble with blank. And he tells me he's got all sorts of ideas for how he can fix his trouble with blank. And one of them is he's going to get all sorts of exercise and then do blank after that. And then another thing he's going to try is only doing blank after 6 p.m. every day instead of all day. And what I told him was, I've been to enough meetings that I can't certify that these stories you're telling me make you an addict. But what I can tell you is addicts are telling those stories. And I was thinking about steps the other day when one of our predecessors came in. I don't know if what she had 25 or 30 years or something. She came to share about steps. And I thought to myself, just because you share about steps doesn't certify that you're clean and serene. Amen. But I gotta tell you, a lot of people sharing about steps happen to be clean and serene. So, just on a whim, I figured, what the hell? Let's talk about steps, at least for a couple of minutes, right? So step one, we admitted we were powerless over addiction, that our lives have become unmanageable. I'm thinking in my mind in step one about surrender. I'm thinking about levels of surrender. When I got here, I had a really big problem with the idea that I couldn't control everything. All right, let me rephrase. I had much more of a problem with feeling that I couldn't control everything. Right? It's about being honest. I already said that. But after I was able to get in a place where I could surrender to that idea that, you know, I'm not the maestro of the universe, then the next thing I had to admit was, even if I was able to control things, I'm not sure that I would know what's best. So all this time, I'm trying to fix, manage, and control as if I had the ability to fix, manage, and control, I'd actually know what was best. I was pretty twisted around, it turns out. I think it was about 90 days clean. I shared at my first home group, the Friday night Abington group in Abington, Pennsylvania, at 8 p.m., 7 Central. And I remember thinking, it's kind of sad that I'm just now realizing that my actions have consequences. And I'm not even kidding. Like, with 90 days clean, for the first time in my life, I'm thinking to myself, wow, when I do things, other things happen. And sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not. Through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problems. Duh, right? I'm still in a place where I gotta surrender and ask, is my life unmanageable because of blank? Every day. Is my life unmanageable because of blank? Does it have anything to do with wanting something different than what I got right now? Step two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It says in step two that for years we tried to think our way into a new way of acting. I've learned what I have to do is act my way into a new way of thinking. If I'm waiting around on the couch to feel good before I take action, I've got a problem. It's never a good day to take action if I'm gauging it by my feelings. We say learning how to live. Part of learning how to live for me is learning that I've got to act my way into a new way of thinking. And like I said before, it doesn't matter if I like it, and it doesn't matter if I understand it first. We got a program of principles written so simply You can follow them in our daily lives. Most important thing about them is that they work. The most important thing about them is that they work. I don't need to ask people to explain how it works. What I need to do is take suggestions and put them into practice. And that's where the third step comes in. I've got to make a decision to do something different. I've got to make a decision to take a suggestion. One suggestion I got from someone who's here tonight when I was newly clean is that in my mental voice, I could say, I surrender. And it helps. Life shouldn't have to be so hard. And when it is, I'm probably running on self-will. And when I say, I surrender in my mental voice, it gets better. I was so concerned with who God was, or if there was a God, or the fact that I don't believe in fairy tales or any of that other stuff, when I got here, that it almost put the brakes on getting anything else done. So my sponsor said, call people up and ask them, what's their higher power? And I did, because he said so. And I thought when I was going to call someone who'd been around the program for a little while, 10 or 20 years or something like that, I thought they were all going to tell me about this guy in the clouds who kind of looked like Santa Claus, who when you ask him for stuff, he gives it to you. And almost without exception, every one of these people told me it's complicated. Sometimes I don't use the path of least resistance. I ask my sponsor the question last. Maybe I should have started with him. He told me, when I asked him, describe your higher power, he said, there is a God and I'm not it. So that if I'm bent out of shape about figuring out who God is or the mysteries of the universe or anything like that, in the meantime, I can stop being God. If I'm concerned about like how we got here and why things happen the way they do, in the meantime, I can stop telling lies. Stop trying to control everything. I can't. It can. Maybe I'll let it. That's what they told me, step 1, 2, 3. I can't. It can. Maybe I'll let it. And for me, my higher power is most closely associated with letting. Not searching for a higher power, not asking for a higher power, but letting a higher power. When I was little, I was a bit of a spoiled brat. I remember sitting down at family dinner saying grace and thinking, boy, is this stupid. We're saying thank you to these mystery people up in the clouds. We've got no idea if they're there or not. And I was so concerned with where the prayers were going. I was thinking to myself, what is there this like central receiving up in the sky where they all go and they're divvied out to the appropriate God based on which language you're speaking or whatever? And what I finally learned around here, what you taught me, was that the important part is that I'm grateful. Not that my gratitude is received by something, but that I'm grateful. I used to have an addict notion of God. I had an on-demand God, like Comcast or Time Warner. Like you pick up the remote, you press the biggest button that's usually red and near the top, and that screen comes up that asks, what do you need? What I wanted was the God where I could press partly cloudy, raise at work, lose a little bit of weight, and then I hit enter, and it's all there. And I thought to myself, well, if that's not God, then what, you know, if God can't do that, then what good is he? And we've got a Just for Today reading in January called Faith, and it says, higher power doesn't calm the storms of life. Higher power calms my heart. I say prayers because it helps me. frankly, and we all get our own God, so just sharing where I'm at, I don't know that I believe that the prayers go anywhere. And I don't concern myself with that. Because you said we pray here to stay clean. So that's what I do. I don't have to understand it or like it. I think God, for me, is closely associated with the here and now. If my disease is I had to have something different, and I thought I had found it in drugs, then the opposite of that is what I got right now. My higher power has something to do with the here and now. My higher power has something to do with doing the next right thing. And my higher power works. We've got a pamphlet called Another Look. It tries to define addiction based on all the things that it's not. Because sometimes complicated things are easier to define by figuring out what they aren't. Well, my higher power works in my life. And if what I'm doing isn't working, then my higher power probably isn't working either. In fact, I'm probably using a lower power, which, oddly enough, I have no problem accepting. Isn't that interesting? Like, over the past year, I think I gained about 40 pounds or something like that. Maybe I'll touch on that later. But when I tell people this, it's almost like I'm saying, well, I don't know what happened. It just, I'm 40 pounds heavier. Right? As if some guy in the sky who looks kind of like Santa just pointed his finger down and bestowed 40 pounds upon me. Like, I have no problem with fairy tales when it's lower power stuff. Right? It's not my responsibility. You know? I've been eating the same and still doing a lot and I get a lot of sleep and everything. 4. In the inventory, well, let's rewind. The first line of step 4, I believe, is that this step will help us to sort out the confusion and contradiction in our lives. And I got to tell you, I got a master's degree in confused. I know exactly what confusion is. That one isn't a problem at all. When I heard the word, or read the word, contradiction, now you got me interested. Contradiction in my life. I learned here from you that the steps are broken into about, well, you could break them up a lot of ways, but the early ones are about relationship with a higher power. The middle ones are about relationship with yourself. And the later ones are about a relationship with others. Excuse me. Then I heard that the early steps, 1, 2, 3, are steps we do to get clean. And the later steps, 10 through 12, are steps we do to stay clean. And the middle steps, 4 through 9, determine the quality of our recovery. So if I can connect the two of those things, middle steps are about a relationship with myself, and middle steps determine the quality of my recovery, then I can conclude that the middle steps, my relationship with myself, will determine the quality of my recovery. So the contradiction in my life, I think, and I'm always very careful because I've only got like a tiny little bit of a clue. Like every couple weeks, I get like a little bit more of a clue, and then I give some of it back, and now I'm like, I've got like a fraction of a clue. I think the contradiction is that I'm a fundamentally good person who's often decided to do bad things. I've got to resolve that issue in my life. Nobody taught me to do this. Nobody's responsible for what I've become but me. No one will get me better but me. Step 5, the first line says, this step is the key to freedom. And we get that freedom by learning how to be present in the here and now. In step 5, my sponsor helped me to identify the exact nature of my wrongs. And almost without exception, when you boil it all down, the exact nature of my wrongs are self-centered fear and control. And it's like a chicken and the egg thing. I'm not sure if I need control more or if I'm more concerned about self-centered fear, but they're entangled in this crazy knot. There's a guy I know, Johnny S., who always says that his disease is like the head of Medusa, and the head is self-centered fear, and all the snakes are coming off are defects, and the only one he keeps mowed down all the time is using. He just doesn't use no matter what. But the other defects from time to time come up as a result of self-centered fear or control. I need help to stay present in the here and now. I need help to be aware of my defects. I was just talking with a friend today who told me I was up all night long because I had so much caffeine. And I said, Gene, oops. I said, Gene, keep coming back. No. I said, isn't it crazy that we go from this precious gift of awareness? And that's what this is, awareness. Sometimes I do things that if I keep doing them, like after a while, I might die. And I become aware of these things, and a lot of times it's less extreme than that, but I do things that make my life unmanageable. And when I become aware of them, this is a tremendous gift. Like, I should be overjoyed and grateful and like, wow, this is the best day ever. I just figured out that this thing was making my life unmanageable. Now I have a choice. I don't have to do it anymore. And instead of being grateful, I skip right over the awareness straight to beating myself up. Something about the way my head works, I default to beat myself up if I'm not careful. Step 6, we were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. I started this step by acquiring a list of defects online. There were, I think, 200 of them. And using a dictionary to look them all up. I thought I had a pretty decent vocabulary, and maybe I do, but oddly enough, so many of the words I was looking up didn't mean what I thought they meant. In addition to figuring out if the defects applied to me and what they meant, I also wrote the opposite of the defect down on paper. A couple of things to note about the 6th step. My experience with the 6th step was that it brought a level of pain that was only comparable to my initial surrender in step 1. The pain was back. And I think I realized ultimately, with your help, that the reason step 6 was so painful is because it's the second big surrender. And the surrender is, just because I know what my defects are doesn't mean I can make them go away. But it's like thinking my way into a new way of acting again. Like if I could just be concerned enough, I would stop doing this, that, and the other. Or if I could just feel good, tomorrow I can stop lying. And so when I looked at the opposite to so many of my defects, what I realized that the opposite of many of my defects, oh boy, was modesty and humility. Love you too. Oh, I hope none of you get hit by lightning. I mean, that would be... Oh. How many of you guys can fit underneath of this thing? Keep going? All right. So then, an addict, and maybe I'll talk real loud. You can hear me from your tents. So this guy in my life tells me, hey, Mark, just like usual, you skipped over the most important part of step six. You're talking about defects. You're talking about God. It says we were entirely ready. My job is to be entirely ready. Not to figure out what my defects are. Not to stop doing my defects, but to be entirely ready. And there are certain things I can do to be entirely ready. And there are certain times when I make choices that make it impossible to be entirely ready. I'm rarely ever entirely ready in a casino. If I don't get enough sleep or I eat crappy food, I'm usually not ready. And I think we've probably reached the point where if I continue to share, people will probably be in danger. So, I don't know, maybe we can finish in the morning or something. Yeah. Hey, I guess I should say that things are way, way better in my life now. Like, it's not even close. And I've got a lot to learn, and I thank you for what you've taught me. Be safe. Thanks for letting me share.
Oh, all right. No, that's it. Perfect.